Indianapolis at the University of Minnesota. I'm so excited to be here. I love Minneapolis. I've been here a few times, but this is Zara's first time here.
This is my first time here. Thank you. I couldn't tell if those were boos or woos. But I'll take it.
So far, what do you think of Minneapolis?
Oh my God, we had amazing food. Amazing food. Everybody's nodding.
Yeah.
Did you have a hot dish? Yes.
You betcha.
And we met a Lyft driver with a recommendation to a psychic.
A handwriting psychic, sorry. Not just a psychic.
Not just any psychic. A handwriting psychic.
Which apparently is a thing where they read your writing and they also psychic at the same time.
It's also apparently a thing to tell a story that starts from when you pick us up and then continues for the 5-minute ride that we have, during which we find out about your first wife and your first divorce.
Yeah.
And your second wife and how you guys were able to stay together.
Yeah.
A little bit about foreign policy.
Yeah. Something about the girlfriend who got into a tragic car accident in between.
The psychic went pale.
It was a very long conversation.
And was like, I have to tell you, she needs to see a doctor. And so he's been seeing that same psychic for 20 years.
Yeah, it was a long conversation.
And then he also pointed out the bridge that was rebuilt.
Yeah, it was...
And the arch bridge, the stone bridge, and without pausing consistently all the way through until he dropped us off and said, have a good night. I was pretty impressed by that.
I was hoping that we would also see Brother Ali in the audience today. No? No? Man.
Or Keith Ellison.
Keith Ellison? No? No? That would have been awesome. Or Ilhan Omar? No? Lots of love for her. We're just naming off. People.
Yeah, now we're just naming people.
No, it's really exciting to be here. As far as Muslim Americana is concerned, I feel like there's a lot of stuff happening in Minneapolis. So it is exciting to be here because I think a lot of what our podcast represents is a lot of what the city represents too. Just kind of this juxtaposition of what it means to be good, bad, and Muslim American, just having to deal with a lot of things that are happening.
Really?
Yes.
Is that like a thing?
It's a totally a thing.
Are Muslims a hot topic right now? Are they a hot topic right now?
They were in the news here. On February 24th, technically. I think in the Star Tribune, right, there was an ad that was bought by local Muslim activists and organizations that were in support of the attacks that were happening at Jewish synagogues.
They weren't in support of the attacks.
No. They were in support of not having attacks. But there's been a lot of Jewish Muslim solidarity stuff happening.
In support of JCC's coping with.
Yes.
Attacks and threats, and it's pretty awesome to see that level of solidarity.
Yeah. And Zara, you've been celebrating.
I've been celebrating.
Happy New Year's!
Thank you. It's Persian New Year. At a time that is the spring equinox, you know, like when a new year should start. In a way that makes sense. Maybe not so much in the middle of winter.
So how do you celebrate? Because I am not Persian. My family's from Bangladesh. And we don't celebrate Persian New Year or spring equinox or anything to mark this day.
We're traditionalists. We play Kesha.
Is Kesha Persian?
Oh, Kesha is hella Persian. Dance music is hella Persian. Yeah. And also the traditional clothing, which is Prada.
Oh, nice.
We're super traditionalists that way.
Did you jump any fires?
I did. Okay, so we have this tradition called Charshamba Suri, uh-huh. Which I recently learned. Also, a lot of my Jewish friends, I have Jewish friends, who also celebrate Purim.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Purim, you jump over fire. It is an influence of the Persian Empire. We had an empire. I always feel like every Persian is like, or just maybe me, I don't know. Speaking on behalf of all Persians, and if I'm wrong, don't correct me. It just looks bad. It just looks bad for the people. It's better if I just say it, you know what I mean? Okay, fire jumping. You jump over fire, and you say, I give you my pallor, you give me your passion, I give you my yellow, you give me your red.
Oh.
It's gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
Appropriate that.
What's the yellow and the red for? Is that a symbolism? Or is that
well,
like,
you know,
about
like
spring?
Yellow, you're just like wan and Trumpish looking.
And then red. Red is blooming, I guess.
Red is blooming. And yeah, like, you know, you're full of passion and fire again. And you're ready to go out with your Muslim rage and creep Sharia all over the planet.
So this is the first year I learned about the Hafsin. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
So tell me about this, because I did not know this existed before.
Okay, so second gen Persian, what's up? Yeah. I know nothing about my culture's roots, but I will do my best. Okay, so here's a little bit of interesting trivia.
Yeah.
The Persian New Year celebration, Nowruz, which literally translates no means new, ruz, day, Nowruz.
Yeah.
Is a Zoroastrian holiday, which, like, sometimes they say pagan, and people correct me because there's like, no, because it's a fire-worshipping holiday. Pagan is, like, earth-worshipping. You have that wrong, and I really don't care. But it's very important to Persians that we hold on to our, like, cultural roots, and I find that really cool because I think that a lot of times cultural identity gets swallowed up in the Muslim train.
Yeah.
So that's rad. I like that. And it started out as Hafshin, Shah. And sharab, which is red wine, was on the table.
But wine's haram.
Exactly.
Oh.
So then when the Islamic Empire emerged, then they switched it up to hafsin, and it's serke, which is vinegar. Just basically, everyone was like, how about instead of red wine, kombucha?
So what's on your table then? What did you grow up with on your table?
So, like, you put little goldfish on the table.
Like, or, real ones or, like, fake ones?
Oh, my God. This is, like, such a thing in my family.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, okay, so every year it's always the debate between, like, do you get real goldfish and manage their lifespan? Or do you get toy goldfish?
Yeah.
And just, like, go right past it. And then, like, some families are Persian families that just, like, buy goldfish, let them die, and dump them out. And are just like, whatever, whatever, whatever. Prada, Prada, Prada. It's just my impression of that kind of person who could just, like, dump goldfish.
Yeah.
Then there's the second type, which is my family. My mom will purchase real-life goldfish, and then my father will be like, why? Because he's very connected to their lifespans. And, like, gets devastated, and he names them. And every time she brings a new set of goldfish, he's always, like, got this, like, look in his eyes that's just like, but Babs and Buster and Goldie and Haddon and all the goldfish that I ever buried. And he's devastated, and my mom's like, it's going to be fine. And they buy another aquarium.
Don't you have, like, past aquariums from past fishies?
Somewhere in the garage. And, like, one year it was a betta fish.
Right.
It was a big thing. There, I really appreciated Firuza Dumas's article. You guys remember Firuza Dumas? She wrote Funny and Farsi. I don't know if you guys, some people remember that. It's a great book. You should definitely get it. She calls Nowruz the Justin Trudeau of holidays.
Everybody likes it.
And there's just one quote in there that I'm going to pull that I want to actually shed light on, because this especially right now is an issue, particularly for me as part of what I see as an intersecting community, being in support of Black Lives Matter, being in support of queer rights.
Yeah.
The Persian community, after, like, the ban has happened, has been really divided. And it's really hard to establish a kind of, like, Iranian solidarity front because we are so politically divided.
Yeah.
There are, like, you know, Persian Jews that are Zionist and in complete contradiction with, like, Persians who identify as Iranians, and then also there are refugees, then also there are Ashkenazis, and then there's also Mizrahis, and there's, like, it's really...
So what's the quote?
Complicated. So it says, there is no controversy associated with Nowruz, which is part of why we all come together on it, because our politics, like, whether you were into the Shah or you weren't into the Shah or whatever, like, we all are able to come together around it. But then she goes on to say, no indigenous people were displaced, no wars were fought, and no one died for us to have this celebration, which is, like, a weird statement.
Yeah.
It's a weird statement. And the reason why I want to speak to it, because I don't know her intent behind the statement. She's a friend of mine because all Persians hang out. I don't know the original intent behind the statement, but I do want to speak to it because there is this sort of, like, white passing rhetoric amongst Persians.
Yeah.
Persians were granted white status during Jim Crow. What the heck? And it's, like, a real certificate. Like, at the Arab American Museum, there's also a certificate of whiteness that was granted. Right. I know. Some Arabs in here are going to be like, wait a minute. Hold up. So anyway, all of this is to dance around what I'm bringing up for topic today, which is Haji Firuz is, like, the Persian character that is a man in blackface. Not cool. And, like, you know, every year is, like, the thing that everyone wants to kind of like look away from and be like, no, we don't do that. But then at the same time, there are houses where like people like my brother-in-law, who's black, walk into and are like, hi. And then some idiot says something like, oh, we have Haji Firuz. Have you seen him? A little problematic. And like, you know, bring it up as like, oh yeah, like we celebrate black people. Here's a man in blackface. So not the same thing, guys. That's super fucking racist.
So I did want to bring up on the Iranian front, we're going to get back to Haji Firuz and later on in the segment. I wanted to bring up the shooting that happened in Kansas. And the shooting that happened in Kansas was a shooting involving Srinivas Kuchibhotla and Alok Madasani, who were in a bar, and this white supremacist walked in and shot them. His name is Adam Purinton. And a white man actually jumped up and took a bullet for this. One of the men died. And one of the things that's been really interesting, speaking as a South Asian Muslim, is hearing all the conversations happening in the world of South Asian activists. There's been a lot of people stepping up saying, we need to stop these attacks happening to brown people. What was interesting was that when the shooting happened, Adam Purinton said, oh, I thought you were Iranian. I didn't think you were Indian. And there was a case of mistaken identity, right? Because all brown people look alike. And so Zara and I were having a really interesting conversation about, you know, like, I know how the South Asian community reacted. I know Indian Americans have been doing vigils all across the country. What have your people been doing?
Hiding and staying quiet.
And so I thought it was interesting because, you know, this is a case of mistaken identity. So he thought they were Iranians, right? And so this whole idea of what it means to be brown and being a target and being white passing and being a target and not being a target, it's kind of messy.
It's pretty messy. Oh, you want more of an explanation? There's this idea floating around amongst the Iranians that I like have been trying to bring over to the other side on this, that if they can pass for white, then they're going to be safe.
Yeah.
And the fact that a brown man was shot, being assumed to be Iranian, to them is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I'm just going to put that out there. Like, that's a thing that somebody said to me in response. Gross, right? That's gross. And I mean, to be fair, like, it's not like this person is saying that's a good thing. What they're saying is, oh, at least then they don't know how to identify us, aka that's a good thing. But that's pretty fucked up. Like, solidarity actually means standing with people whose bodies are in danger.
Or standing in front of bullets. I think I want to say that I've been really upset over people wearing safety pins, but this is actually what solidarity looks like. Like, I'm not saying everyone needs to step in front of a gun, but really that's what this man did. He saw something happening and said that he didn't want it to happen. He didn't want it to happen with him there, and he took a bullet for these two men, which is really commendable, and a commendable act of solidarity.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you were to ask him, like, if he was wearing a safety pin, he would say, what the fuck are you talking about? Right? Not really what's on his mind. That's acts of solidarity.
For me, what's been really bothering me is that South Asians and Indians, people with brown skin, have been mistaken as Muslim since September 11th, since before September 11th, I was reminded of the dot busters that happened in the late 1980s, where in New Jersey, white supremacists were going around attacking people who were wearing bindis. And this also goes back to the Bellingham riots of 1907, where South Asian and white folks were working in the paper mills, and white folks were trying to run out the Indian, South Asian people that were working in the paper mills. And that was a race riot that happened in September of 1907, which was 100 years ago, right? So this idea of being brown and South Asian and being immigrant, being run out of this country, goes way, way deep, right? So I think what was really bothering me, back to that, what was really bothering me was this idea that, like, oh my gosh, you know, all of a sudden we're being attacked, but we've been attacked as brown people in this country for a very long time.
Yes. And, like, probably why it is convenient to hide behind a white passing identity.
If you can do that. Some of us don't have that privilege.
That's the thing that is really frustrating about this. Like, it's already gross, right? It's already gross. Also, it's not really useful. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure people don't see me as white. And Regardless, I'm also pretty sure that if you have to convince people that you're white, you're not. You know, like, I don't think that, like, white status is really something to be granted. Like, the only other person I know who did that was Hitler. Just saying. But when I was a kid, like, this has been a long time strategy for Persians to, like, be safe, is to say we're Persian, not Iranian. And while, yes, there's the whole connection to, like, Persian roots and whatnot, it's also a dodge. And sometimes a necessary dodge when you're dealing with an aggressive person. During the Iranian hostage crisis, people would run up at people like my father with bats saying, "Are you Iranian?" You say, "No, I'm Persian." End of conversation. Where's that? They don't know. As a community strategy, it's fucked up. And it's not enough. And it's not going to work. And it's not working. But it's hard. It's really hard. Like, I get a lot of pushback for identifying as Iranian and Muslim. When I had my show, All Atheists Are Muslim, which is about moving in with my whitey white infidel atheist boyfriend and telling my Iranian Muslim parents about it, which is available if your college would like to invite it to be performed on your campus. Just putting that out there. When I identified as Iranian and Muslim, I got a lot of pushback saying, "Why are you identifying us as Muslim? We're trying to break free," which the complexity of that, like adding complexity to the Iranian identity, yes, I'm a fan, but doing it so that you could say we're not brown, we're white, no, not a fan of that.
Yeah, definitely not a fan of that. I think we should all just move to Hawaii. Right, Hawaii?
You got my attention.
Yeah, I mean, Muslim Ban 2 was supposed to happen last week as of the recording of this article, and it was a judge in Hawaii that knocked it down. So give it up for Hawaii. And now all these conservatives are boycotting Hawaii, so I think it is a great time to go to Hawaii right now. I want to put my Muslim dollars into Hawaii. Fly good Muslim, bad Muslim out to Hawaii. We will come there. We will support Hawaii however we can. I think what was so funny about this was there was all these articles saying, like, oh, conservatives are saying that they're going to avoid Hawaii now and Hawaii should be in trouble. And Hawaii was a colonized island. They never wanted to be a part of America, right? They're like, yeah, dude, stay out of here. We don't want you to come here. And I'm pretty sure they're pretty happy out there.
Yeah. Anyone who would like to invite us to do a live show in Hawaii, I will clear my calendar.
Yeah, we're coming. The thing about this second Muslim ban, I mean, they're calling it an immigration ban, but we all know it's a Muslim ban, it was the same thing as Muslim Ban 1, and they just kind of, like, tweaked a little bit to see what was happening, and then, of course, the judge knocked it down, too. So, I mean, the way the media was trying to, A, not call it a Muslim ban was ridiculous, and B, thinking that, like, if you just change some of the words that it would be different, that was also super wrong. So I'm really glad that that didn't go through. We were ready to be prepared on the 16th to do some dramatic actions. We didn't have to. Super happy about that.
That's another incident of a lot of folks thinking that if they don't look Muslim, that they're gonna slide by.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting to me to hear people say things like, "But I'm Colombian, why am I being detained?" And it's like, do you not know how racism works?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is what we were talking about. We've been talking about this, and a lot of activists have been talking about this, is we know that in the past month, Muhammad Ali Jr. was detained twice, right? He was detained in Fort Lauderdale and in Washington, D.C. American-born Muslim, he has an American passport. He was born here. He's son of the greatest.
But maybe he was born in Hawaii, Tess.
Maybe. I think he would still be detained. And I think what the subtext of the Muslim ban is, stop everyone that looks brown. And it's Muslim ban is just kind of...
Yeah, when we were talking about it, you used a really great phrase, which was it was Trump's way of signaling to Border Patrol.
Yeah.
Racism is cool now.
Yeah, and so they're just stopping it. Then the case that I saw this week is the daughter of Sabrina Sadaf Siddiqui, who is 17 and born in America, born in Tennessee. They were coming back from pilgrimage in Mecca, and she wasn't allowed to board the plane to come to America because she was banned from America, which is ridiculous because everyone who you talk to is like, oh, I'm an American-born citizen. I'm fine. I'll be okay. But she's 17. She's not even technically an adult. And she's not allowed back in this country. So there's been a lot of organizing around this. She's from Knoxville, Tennessee. They're going to try to fly again tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm. It just makes my heart sink. And it, like...
I mean, my dad would say that. My dad went to Bangladesh 10 days after the first Muslim ban. I was like, are you sure you want to go? And he said, oh, I'm fine. I have a American passport. I was like, that's not fine anymore. It doesn't work that way. When the Japanese internment happened and people were being sent to Manzanar, Japanese Americans, American citizens were being sent out of this country to South America and were being kicked out of this country. And those were people with American citizenships. So that blue passport, the idea of citizenship just doesn't have any weight in Trump America.
Yeah, and the part of the reason why I've really been watching the work of activists working for undocumented residents, Americans who are undocumented, because of the lack of due process. And how also, like the Supreme Court justice who is chatting with Congress as we speak, talks a lot about precedent and the importance of precedent. And how he's just really a fan of precedent, which just like makes me break out into a sweat. Because basically the precedent of no due process also means that if somebody wants to contest your passport's validity, then I get detained for how long, where?
And probably Guantanamo Bay.
Right, how do I contact my family? How do I contact a lawyer?
Yeah.
It's so scary. And my cousin's coming back and forth from Iran. And they have a green card. And, you know, there was the whole, like, it's going to be fine, of course. But then also, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking scary.
Yeah. Due process for Executive Order 9066, which is the one that sent Japanese Americans to Manzanar and all these other concentration camps, that was technically never knocked down by the government. We were just offered an apology for that, which means that according to precedence, they can bring that back. Which is frightening because you know that black and brown bodies are going to be the first one on the line to be next there. So I'm not looking forward to this new Supreme Court judge who it looks like he's going to be brought in. The last thing I wanted to bring up on the Muslim ban is that in the news, because obviously the Muslim ban hasn't been working technically, what we've heard is that the U.S. is banning laptops and iPads to go from going on the plane, which is silly. I mean, I've been seeing some tweets from folks that are like, oh, because the government wasn't able to ban people, now they're just banning their equipments, which is kind of what it feels like is happening. And I mean, like, really, like, what can an iPad do? Also, like, I was thinking about the logistics of this. Like, when you put your electronics and, like, luggages, then, like, your luggage might get stolen and then you're going to lose that. Like, there's a lot of, like, I don't want to put electronics in my luggage if I travel internationally. Even though there's a lock on it, but you know that lock gets busted and then things get stolen. This has obviously happened to me in the past, which is why.
Yeah, also there was the instance where we were traveling for a Good Muslim, Bad Muslim show, and my luggage was taken. And immediately, I got a call that said somebody accidentally took your luggage. They found out because they opened it, and there was a shitload of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim stickers inside.
Yeah.
And a really weird globe, white, blue mic thing that they didn't understand what it was and called us immediately to let you know you can have it.
I have my Good Muslim, Bad Muslim sticker on my luggage so mine doesn't get stolen anymore. I'm just saying.
This is a solid tactic.
So awkward ask a Muslim.
Yay!
Yay. So this is a segment that we have where we talk about
awkward
asks.
All right, Taz.
Oh, you want my awkward ask a Muslim?
I want your awkward ask a Muslim.
So we were in Philadelphia for our last show, and I was wearing a Vigilant Love shirt. Vigilant Love is a Japanese-American, Muslim-American organization in Los Angeles. My shirt had something about solidarity on it, and I was thinking about how upset I was by the capitalist system and just thinking about resistance and solidarity. And the woman sitting next to me on the airplane, this is mid-flight. She's like looking out the window. She's like, oh, it's really pretty outside, isn't it? I was like, yeah. And then she said, are you interested in making money? I was like, wearing a solidarity shirt and being super anti-capitalist in my thinking right at that moment, I was like, no, I'm not interested in making money. And then she paused. She's like, oh, do you like to drink wine? I was like, no, I'm a Muslim that doesn't drink. Like, that's, no. And then she just turns away and starts playing her, like no ending conversation. I was just like... What is happening? And I think it was a pyramid scheme, right? She was trying to get me to buy into something and then sell something. And I think it had to do with wine. And maybe, is this a thing? Like, do people sell wine like this? I see a white face nodding yes. So.
Wait. People do not sell wine traveling around airports. waiting for people with Vigilant Love shirts to say that they're interested in making money to then sell wine.
I know.
I'm trying to understand the vigorous agreement.
She didn't know her target audience when she looked at me. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna say. She couldn't have, picked a more wrong demographic.
Yeah. And then she didn't end the conversation. She just went back to playing the Jewel game that you play on your phone. I don't know what it's called, but I was just like, wait, no ending conversation to that? You're not going to say, okay, thank you. She was just like, oh. And then, turn around. I'm fine being anti-capitalist and anti-wine. Sorry, woman.
All right, so speaking of capitalism, my awkward ass was attempting to support my community.
Yeah.
And then I was let go and asked if I would instead donate to their cause.
Wait, they invited you to perform.
They invited me to perform.
And they were going to give you money to perform.
They were going to give me money to perform.
Can you donate to us instead and we can't have you perform?
They didn't even say wrong. They just said we had some negative responses from sponsors.
Ooh.
We can't have you perform, but do you mind performing for free or donating your time or money?
Never ask artists to do things for publicity and for free.
Also, I'm not really clear why I was let go.
Right.
Because then I said, who are the sponsors that had a negative response? And he said, oh, I just mean that by negative, fiscally negative. This is very validating because I felt crazy. I felt like I was being irrational and illogical and pressed forward with, but what do you mean subtracting funds? And still no reply. And then instead I got a phone call from someone and I said, do you work for the organization? And she said, no, I'm just a friend. And I said, of who? And she said, of the community, nobody, just, And I was like, is this the mob or the Illuminati? What is going on? Who are you? And she's like, I'm just a completely separate individual from everything, and I'm just calling to let you know that, there was no, ill will or anything like that. Nobody had a negative response of any kind.
Then
and I was like,
you uninvited.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't understand why you're calling me if you are in literally no position to change the situation.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, I'm calling because you're bitter. She actually said that. She said, I'm calling because you're bitter. And I was like, I am now. I'm feeling really bitter right now. And I just started laughing. I was like, I don't understand what is going on. Thank you so much. Bye. And then I got a phone call from the organizer who then explained that it was all as a result of incompetence. I couldn't have guessed that. Thanks for clarifying. And, that it just wasn't important. And so that's why they let me go, because they didn't need an MC, and it just wasn't important. And also, nobody had put in a proposal for me, because I had never provided an invoice, which, usually I get asked to provide, a real invoice before somebody decides to cancel. I usually get a warning that's like, hey, cancellation is on the line. So I'm like, oh, I should probably send you an invoice. That didn't happen.
Can we get shirts that just say bitter on them?
You know, if they had sent me that, I actually would have been fine. I would have been fine. And then actually it would make more sense if someone was like, do you want to make money and sell wine? Bitter. And I'm wearing my bitter t-shirt.
Bitters.
Then I would be like, yes, yes.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring it up is because if you can't notice, I have some issues with my own community peoples right now. And this is not a time for us to be incompetent or to shortchange our artists, even though they did make an effort to compensate me, they did. I would like some room provided by Persian communities for me to take some space in. Because I feel like that would be cool if it was someone other than Mashrabani or Maximini. That would be nice.
Yeah. Do you have a creeping Sharia?
Okay, but creeping Sharia. We have a tradition that I have just established as of today.
I've never heard of this.
For the audience, I need you guys to do we're going to go creeping Sharia. Just follow my hands like I'm a composer with your volume. We're a low-budget podcast. We don't really have, segment headers. So you guys are going to be our soundbite for this. All right. Here we go.
Creeping Sharia.
Welcome to Creeping Sharia. With stories of us winning. All right, what you got? Creep on me, Taz.
Oh my gosh. I got this one sent through people on Twitter. So thank you, Twitter suggestions. We always love Twitter suggestions. Hashtag good Muslim, bad Muslim. Okay, so for that little period I lived in Saudi Arabia, my dad would brush his teeth with this thing that was a stick. I think the word for it is makwas. Is that right? Am I saying it right? I'm looking at the audience, yeah? Maswak.
Yeah, maswak. In Persian we say maswak.
And it's basically just like this branch from a tree. And then you like rip the end of the branch and then so it's a little frayed and then you just brush your teeth with it, right? Yeah, so this is like old school, artisanal, grassroots, locally grown,
farm to table toothbrush.
Right? Okay, so I can only imagine that this white folks had invented this. But now if you go to this website called Twig Brush, you can buy this like plastic container that has the like tree branch in it. And it's called Twig Brush, and there's nothing like Muslimy about the site except that it's the color of green. And they don't mention like the Arab roots or they mention nothing.
That's a total creeping Sharia.
Yeah.
This is so subversive and sneaky.
Hippies are going to use this.
You are brushing your teeth.
They're not going to know that they're totally getting Muslim-fied.
And fighting gingivitis at the same time.
Yeah. Raise your hands. How many of you have seen people use this or have used this in the past?
The twig brush.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay.
I tried using it in the past. I just, like, I need my toothpaste. Like, I can't just depend on my saliva and the stick to... It's so disgusting. My dad would like just buy a whole bunch of them and then he'd just kind of leave them around the house. I'm just like, that's
what?
Yeah, that's
you didn't
just,
know which one was
I
his?
I didn't know what, I mean, like they were all his because no one else in the family was using it. But it's not like you leave your toothbrush lying around the house. You know, what if it's touching like your like coffee table and stuff? You know, it was gross. My dad would, like, when he first got into it, he was like, always into it.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because my husband always leaves, not to bring my husband into this, but I'm just going to shame him right now. Okay, he leaves his toothbrush on the countertop.
Of where?
Like, of the bathroom. He just like, and then I'll put it in the glass and he's like, oh, OCD much or something. And I'm like, are you kidding? The dude is in medical school, so it's like, he's like, yeah, building bacteria makes you stronger with immunity. I want to say this is a thing that guys do. But I don't want to...
I mean, there are guys in the audience. You can ask how many of them...
Is this, like, exclusive to... Do you... Raise your hand if you leave your toothbrush on the counter and you're gross like that. Oh, there. And we busted my gender binary assumptions.
Yeah, you did.
Some women raise their hands. All right. Well, I'm proud of your pride. I'm grossed out, but I'm proud of your
pride. What's your creeping Sharia?
All right. Speaking of green and Muslimness, in case you haven't noticed, Irish people are Muslim.
Really?
That's
really?
It. That's my conclusion.
Is it because it's a green?
I just really like the idea of just claiming green, like across the board, and being like, that's Muslim. And, okay, some really rad statements made by the Irish Prime Minister. That was pretty awesome. Yeah? Yeah, you can give a round of applause for that. I mean, it's the first Muslim Irish Prime Minister I know.
I don't think he claims Muslim, but okay.
I don't think that's how it works, actually. I'm pretty sure you could just call somebody Muslim and that's it, too. Fox News does it. I'm going to pull one. I was going to say. He said, I'm always struck by the American national anthem. For us, you say, the land of the free and the home of the brave. Our people are as brave as ever, but maybe not as free. And gave Trump the side eye, and that with him in the room, that was powerful.
Yeah, Trump was standing back to his back right when he said that.
And I think side eye is also really Muslim, so double whammy.
Can we talk about the side eye that Merkel gave Trump in the room together? That was an incredible side eye.
Oh, dang. And since we're claiming prime ministers one by one. Also, there's Alexei Navalny, who is Vladimir Putin's biggest critic, recently had this, like, liquid thrust at his face that turned his whole face green.
Yeah, and didn't come off. It stained his skin.
Yeah, like, literally, he looks like Jim Carrey from The Mask.
Or a Smurf.
Or kind of like a Smurf, yeah, a little bit like a Smurf. Yeah, and then he decided to just, like, own the green, and then his supporters owned the green, and they painted their faces green, and their hands green, and, like, rocked it. And I was like, that is so Muslim.
Yeah,
that's my favorite
totally
Muslim.
Sharia. Do you have a good Muslim award to give out?
I do. But actually, I'm kind of excited about yours. I want to hear about yours first, because Taz's good Muslim award is like two birds with one stone, because it's also the hot Muslim award.
Yeah, it's... How many of you guys have seen Mr. Erbo, the video of those Iraqi men in Iraq?
Wow, really specific, thanks.
But they would, like, dress really dapper, and they, like, just released all these videos of, like, how hot they looked.
This will be on our homeworks link page.
Yeah. They're getting my award, because what I love about them is, like, they're fashionable, but not... They're fashionable in a place where fashion is not supported, right? So they're taking these magazines from everywhere and taking it to the tailor down the street and getting these clothes made for them because they don't have access to these clothes and they want to fashion themselves in a certain way. And usually I'm kind of anti-fashion, but I like the fact that they're trying to establish a look and establish resistance with fashion in how they're behaving. Also, they're really hot.
I feel like the latter one is really the selling point. Because, I mean, they're Kurdish hipsters.
Yeah, but I mean, people don't like being called hipsters, but that's what they are. They, like, have bicycles.
And I would like to confirm all of Taz's insights. They are extremely hot.
Yeah.
Just have to take our words for it.
Yeah. They're calling themselves a Kurdish gents club, spreading positive social change.
I would, if they wanted a live show,
yeah.
Like in Hawaii,
yeah.
I would be a fan of collaborating.
Yeah, totally down to collaborate with these guys.
Good Muslim, bad Muslim, live from Hawaii with a Kurdish gents club. Pretty hot. All right. My Good Muslim Award is also pretty fucking hot.
Yeah.
Mahersha Ali.
Yeah.
Yes.
That deserves a big mashallah.
Yes, it does. Oh,
yeah?
One, two, three.
Mashallah.
Everyone knows who he is, right?
Mahershala. Moonlight, Oscar winner.
Everyone seen Moonlight?
Oh, yeah. So this was really interesting because, like, also, yes, yay, Muslims winning Oscars.
Yeah. Some were saying first Muslim winning an Oscar. I think that might have been knocked down for a little bit. I don't know. Was that true? Is he the first Muslim?
I believe he is the first Muslim. I believe that the controversy was because he's Ahmadi Muslim, and there's actually a fatwa from the Pakistan government against Ahmadis, saying that they should not be calling themselves Muslim because they're not a sect of Islam, and saying de-Muslim.
Yeah, it was really interesting the day that the Oscars happened. Like, as soon as it came out that he was Muslim, all of Muslim pop culture media was like, oh, you know, a Muslim person wins the Oscars. And then, like, immediately after, they're like, oh, Ahmadiyya Muslim. And then all of a sudden, the Pakistani media, like, slowly deleted their tweets and they, like, pulled back from it. And you're just like, damn, yeah. That's, like, harsh. Like, we need to be celebrating all kinds of Muslims. That was really messed up.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was like, he's Muslim, he's Ahmadi Muslim. Just Muslim, just Muslim. Why does there have to be a category? There could just be a general Muslim of Oscar winners. And I just thought that, wow, like, it hit me really hard as a Shia Muslim who's, like, on the fringe, apparently. Right? Because there's the whole, like, de-Muslimifying people. And, like, I always get, like, oh, there's only two sects of Islam. And actually, no, there's, like, more than 30, 40 sects of Islam. But what happens is they all get dismissed as, like, well, they're not really Muslim. Just, like, you know, that's not cool. And then... At the same time, I remember last year when Will Smith was boycotting the Oscars, there was the Oscar So White hashtag and movement. One of the arguments was, oh, who really cares about the Oscars? It's not that big of a deal. Relax. And I was like, it's kind of a big deal just like in the industry. And then now this year we see globally, it contends with fatwas.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful. So, yeah.
Speaking of fatwas.
Yes.
Do you have any fatwas?
Fatwa time.
Do you have any fatwas to declare?
Yeah, I feel like I've established a pretty strong fatwa case against the depiction of Haji Firuz.
Okay, so when you were showing me pictures of Haji Firuz earlier today, it looks like the black-faced coal carrier that the Dutch use around Santa Claus. It was almost exactly the same.
It is pretty similar, and I have to say the arguments for it, which there are arguments for it, sound pretty defensively similar. You know, it's like, well, in the time of Mesopotamia, when we originally celebrated this, there was no racism. I can't go back to Mesopotamia to confirm that. But I will say, in this day and age, such depictions have a history that if you are not aware of, you should make yourself aware of right away. I fatwa that shit.
Holy fatwa that. I want to fatwa talking about hijabs.
Like, at all?
We talk about it so much, and then, you know, in the past month, there was, like, the Nike hijab, and people working out, and then there's, like, a Nike swoosh on it.
And the Barbie doll hijab.
The Barbie doll hijab, like, created by, like, two non-Muslim women. They want to, like, create these, like, hijabs for Barbie dolls that are, like, cost $6, and my mom would be really upset because you just cut a strip of cloth and it's not worth $6. It's just a Barbie doll. And then the EU banned hijabs, and I'm just
over. What's your opinion on that? What's your opinion on that?
I don't want to talk about it. And the hijabs are always in the news. And that was my way of talking about all those topics without having to talk about hijabs.
It's done. I shall never discuss it again.
Never again. I mean, the reason why we don't like discussing it is because it's always in the news, right?
Is it?
And people are always depicting Muslim women as with hijabs or without hijabs.
Are they?
And they are. They are. And so, it's just exhausting.
Well, yeah, like, and also, it's just, as a feminist, do we really need to keep talking about what women wear?
Yeah.
All the time? Right? It's like, really? Again?
And the thing about the Nike hijab, women with hijab were working out with before Nike put a swoosh on it. You know? It's just, they're just trying to make money.
Okay, but now I have to create a hijab company that has a hijab that says before Nike put a swoosh on it. Because that's just a really good business.
That's going to be our new entrepreneurship project that we're going to create.
But we will never talk about it.
Okay, so we're almost done with the podcast. But Zara, speaking of podcasts, we are in the month where the hashtag tripod is big. Everyone's talking about listening to podcasts. So how many of you listened to our podcast before you came today?
By applause. We're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like half the audience.
How many of you are going to listen to podcasts now? Yeah?
See what we do for the industry.
How many of you don't know how to listen to a podcast? No, it's okay. You can clap. I'll give you a quick... So you go to iTunes. You can go to a podcast section, and you can download podcasts to listen to. You can also download an app called Stitcher, which is what I use. And then you just plug in a bunch of words, and Stitcher doesn't drain your data. How do you listen? Do you listen to iTunes?
Yeah, I also, my favorite way is to just go to the website and stream it from the website because I don't understand apps.
So be sure to do that. I think one of the biggest barriers to podcasts are people either love podcasts, they're super addicted to it, or they don't know how to access it. But there's a lot of conversations happening in the podcast world, so I highly recommend doing that. I have my top 5 lists of podcasts to listen to.
Okay, so for Tripod, we're going to share our top 5.
Yes, these are my top 5s. First one, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. It's a one that comes out of this city, Minneapolis. I love it. The one that I got recently obsessed with, I just finished, they just have 6 episodes, so it's like a project one, is Missing Richard Simmons. Because OMG, I didn't know Richard Simmons was gone.
Missing, not gone.
Yes.
He's still with us.
You have to listen to the podcast to get the full story. Third one, Mashup Americans. It's a great podcast that comes out of KPCC. Two wonderful women having wonderful conversations. Andrew T's Yo, Is This Racist? Where people ask questions about if things are racist or not, and he answers the question, and it's super fun to be on. We've been on that one before, and it's just great to listen to. Finally is Women of the Hour, which is Lena Dunham's podcast, and it's a great podcast where they have a diversity of women's voices, and it's not just Lena Dunham. Their producer did a really good job of bringing in multiple female voices, so listen to those podcasts. Those are my 5.
All right, my 5 are the Identity Politics podcast, which we were just on.
Yeah.
Yes, which also has an episode that goes in-depth into the Ahmadi Muslim. Is Mahersha Ali Muslim? Is he not? Hashtag Identity Crisis, Identity Politics podcast.
Run by 2 Black Muslim women. Great podcast. New podcast, too.
The Black Girl Book Club also is a new podcast that's out. That's awesome. See Something, Say Something.
By our friend Ahmed Ali Akbar at BuzzFeed.
Politically Reactive is in its 2nd season.
Kamau Bell and Hari Kondabalu.
W. Kamau Bell and Hari Kondabalu. And Asian Americana, which is by our producer,
Quincy Surasmith. So we gave you 10 podcasts. I hope you were writing that down. You can replay this segment later. Download those podcasts.
All right. That's our list. And
oh my gosh, we're at the end of our show. Thank you so much for having us. This was awesome. So excited to be here.
Tell us what you got going on, Taz. Tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Tazzy Star on Twitter, and you can find me on the internet. I will be at Harvard on April 5th, speaking on a South Asian hip-hop poetry panel, and I will be at the South Asian American Leaders Tomorrow. SALT is the name of the organization. There's a South Asian Summit on April 21st. What about you?
I'm doing stand-up in L.A. Then I'm headed to Oakland to perform stand-up at a fundraiser for the Urban Montessori. And then I'm going to San Francisco Punchline to do a benefit stand-up showcase for Neural. And then I'm flying out to New York to give an award to George Takei. George Takei. I know. Thank you to the Opportunity Agenda for this opportunity. And then I'm headed back to San Francisco to do stand-up for immigrant rights. Gosh, I'd really love a manager.
Yeah, Zara and I are pretty busy. And thank you to the staff here who brought us out.
University of Minnesota in Minneapolis! Yes. Shout out to Peter and Lynn von Brockton and the live studio audience here at Anderson Hall in Minneapolis. You guys are amazing. Shout out also to Loyola University College and Professor Oyan Poon in the School of Education.
Yeah, we just came from Loyola. It was awesome.
And people always ask, how do you get good Muslim, bad Muslim to perform live at any given location like Hawaii?
Hawaii.
And it happens because of our listeners and our fans. Peter coordinated this. He hit us up and then brought so many departments together and organizations. And so really it's like, you know, our fans are doing the legwork. So please go do that. And in Hawaii.
Yeah. You can contact us on goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. We have a contact page there. So I think it's going to be 18 degrees outside tonight, Zara.
I think I'm going to get my handwriting read by a psychic.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy Potluck. Potluck.
And I think side eye is also really Muslim, so.